Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hi there, and welcome to Fork Tales. Today at Fork Tales, we're joined by a friend of mine, Edward Mendina, president of Ramona's Food Group. Ramona's is a family-owned business known for its authentic Mexican meals. Under Edward's leadership, Ramona's has transformed from a struggling business into a thriving brand rooted in tradition and innovation. Edward, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be with you.
So, okay, great. Talk a little bit about Ramona's Food Group. What is it and how has it evolved over the years? I mean, I think when I met you a long time ago, you were dealing with some restaurants and trying to reposition things. And obviously, it's grown into so much more than that.
Yeah, you know, Mike, Ramona's is a great story. I always say we're like a 78-year-old startup. It was started in 1947. A great story of rags to riches. It was founded by a lady, Romana Banuelos, who was born in a little town of Miami, Arizona, before the Depression. During the Depression, her family, even though they were United States citizens, were deported to Mexico.
Wow.
That's just kind of how Arizona rolled back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she eventually made her way back to Los Angeles, started making tortillas, which she delivered on the bus, which is an amazing feat in itself. Shortly after, she became friends with a guy named Glenn Bell, who sounds familiar to many of you. He's the guy that started Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm.
So we were the main tortilla supplier to Taco Bell in the 60s and 70s. Obviously, they got too big for us. But so we ended up kind of exploring into food service. And eventually, we got into frozen burritos.
Mm-hmm.
in the early 70s. At the same time, we had a couple restaurants here in Gardena, California, which became kind of like a local community staple, very popular, serving great Mexican food. And that's kind of the history of it.
Yeah. So obviously deep authenticity, the roots of Ramona's are, you know, go far back. How do you, in today's food landscape, you know, what does authenticity mean to you?
Yeah. You know, it's, staying true to our roots. You know, our recipes are over 100 years old. I forgot to mention that when Mrs. B, as we call her, was mm-hmm. a young girl, her and her family used to make food for the miners, the gold miners in northern Mexico. And the miners would actually pay with gold flakes.
Wow.
And so that's how they made a living. But she carried those recipes from her early days. So we have not ventured from those. You know, there's been a lot of pressure to start using canola oil and sure. all kinds of substitutes. But you know, we like to think of ourselves as like the in and out of Mexican food. You know, we do a couple things. We do them well. You know, I know everybody's going to chicken sandwiches, but, you know, you'll never see In-N-Out go to chicken sandwich.
Right. That's right.
So we just kind of do what we do, and the results speak for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of companies and restaurants will jump on the next trends and stuff to try and stay out in front or keep up, whichever the case may be. But there's something to be said for the authenticity. And you mentioned In-N-Out. I mean, they stay true to who they are. They always have and they always will. And I think because of that, people have a deep appreciation for the brand.
Right, right. I would like to expand as much as In-N-Out, but
sure.
We'll get there eventually.
So, okay, Ramona's is family-owned, and we've talked a lot about founders on this program and CEOs of family-owned companies. When it comes to the families, that has great benefits. There's also struggles. We all know that. So what's the family dynamic like at Ramona's? And, you know, how do you make it work? Can you talk a little maybe about the history and how it is now?
Yeah, you know, right now it works out great. So Ramona's is owned by myself and my cousin Robert. Robert is the grandson of the founder, and we have a great dynamic, primarily because there's an age difference. I'm about 14 years older. Mm-hmm. We're also very different. I'm the accountant mm-hmm. of the family. He's kind of the rock and roll foodie of the family. So it's a great partnership because, you know, we kind of stick in our own lane.
Complement each other, yeah.
Yeah, we complement each other, kind of yin and yang, mm-hmm. Which is kind of nice. And it wasn't always this way. You know, when I first came to Ramona's, I was not an owner. I came on in the finance role. And the dynamic in the family was not very good. It was quite ugly, actually, mm-hmm. which kind of led to our purchase in 2017. So it kind of worked out.
That's wild. It's interesting because a lot of times, obviously, when the family stuff isn't working, you know, it ends up getting parted out or outside buyers. But you're able to do it within the family, which is really kind of cool. So that's awesome. So back on the family thing, I mean, there's obviously a lot of advantages to corporate structure. Then there's also a lot of advantages to independence. I mean, you know, I'll say this as an agency, you know, owner, we own several agencies, but we're 100%, you know, fiercely, as we say, independent. So we don't have to answer to shareholders or board or anything like that. What do you think are some of the unique advantages of being family owned?
Well, I think there's the kind of the obvious ones. You know, we make really quick decisions, new products, personnel issues, investment issues. We can literally go to lunch and decide over a martini. You know, it's like, hey, this is where we're going.
So you drink martinis at lunch is what you're saying?
Sometimes.
Okay. Well, I respect that. You're the financial guy. You can do whatever you want.
And also, you know, we can just really rely on each other, I think, more than just somebody that's completely independent. You know, there's a family bond that we're looking out for each other. And that's a really strong bond. Yeah. So
now, have there ever been, you know, moments other than over martinis where the family lines have and business got blurry? I mean, you know, when you're kind of going back and forth there?
Yeah, you know, not so much in the new ownership structure, but in the previous family structure, there was a lot of drama. Primarily because Mrs. B, the founder, you know, had a couple marriages. So her children from both marriages were here. And there was just a lot of bad feelings around that. So just people were not kind of rowing in the same direction. Sure. It was always, well, your grandpa was this and your grandpa mm-hmm. was that. And just, oh, man.
Yeah.
It was not a good scenario.
Makes for tough holidays.
Oh, yes. There was actually no holidays.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm laughing. I should be laughing at that. It's tough. Because, I mean, look, we all hear about that an awful lot in family business. I mean, it just becomes, well, you kind of, in a way, you can lose your family, right? You can end up with a, you know, board of directors instead of a family. So
that's so true.
Be tough. So in what ways does being family owned influence the company culture? I mean, so obviously there's a lot of good to it. And it sounds really cool that you guys basically have very, very different personalities and roles. So to a degree, you said stay in our own lanes. I mean, that probably works really, really well. I mean, but there's got to be some influences being, you know, for the culture of the company being family owned.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, it's obviously no secret to our employees that, you know, Robert and myself are related. And I think I hate to overuse this, right, because it gets overused a lot. But, you know, we all have a family culture. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very small. We're very lean. So, you know, we know everybody by first name. We you know, we go to people's funerals. We go to people's marriages. Mm-hmm. It's really kind of small knit community here. And to me, the culture that we've tried to create is some very independent. You know, I like to say culture is the way people act when I'm not here.
Yeah.
You know, and I think people are very responsible, and when we're not here, they get it done.
So. Yeah, that's great. That's great. So I'm going to talk about you here a little bit, though. You started Ramona's as a director of finance in 2012, and you said you were an owner, right? Yeah. Ramona's was struggling when you came in. You described the state of the company as bleak. You and your team turned it around in 6 months, which is amazing. Talk about what you saw and then when you started and what you did to turn it around.
Yeah. So, you know, I always remember my first day here. I was filling out, the required HR docs. And I just hear people throwing F-bombs in the office next door, like just really cussing each other out. And I'm like, wow, this is my first day. And this is what it's like. And shortly after, I learned, you know, the company was losing $200,000 to $300,000 a month. It was just, you know, a lot of wasteful spending. There was employees, you know, coming out of every seam and crack. It was not a good situation. And there was a very short amount of cash to keep us going forward. So, you know, one of the things we had to do is calculate our break even. You know, we had to get to break even and to, you know, was keep the company going.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's tough. And what a way to sort of be introduced to the business. So, you know, of all the things you and your team did in those 6 months, I know you said you had to get to break even, but what do you think had the most impact on the turnaround?
Well, it was not easy. You know, it's sales and CPG. It's hard to just, you know, increase sales overnight, especially in the big retailers. So a lot of our efforts were focused on the cost management. Again, calculating the break even, getting to break even, and that meant cutting costs, you know, working with suppliers, getting right-sized with employees. I had a large retailer, largest customer by far. And I said, hey guys, I need to take up the price. And they were like, no. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, then that was your last order. And, you know, playing almost
hardball.
Playing chicken.
Yeah.
Hardball. Yeah. And, because I knew our product is worth it. You know, we're a big customer to them and, you know, the final customers, the public, they love our products. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, they call me the next day and they said, Ed, you know, whatever your price increase you need, take it. Mm-hmm. But just keep in mind, the final consumer has to kind of take that price increase as well. So they became a really good partner after that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And look, you know, it is tough, right? We all deal, no matter what your business is, you deal with competition, pricing constraints, and the market as a whole, and you have to be able to thread that needle, right? I mean, you need to make a profit. You need to take care of your company, but there's the consumer in the end, and obviously in your case, there's the retailer, which is tough. I mean, not an enviable position to be in. But it's funny, you know, we all have, as we're entrepreneurs or we're growing companies, we always have this sort of like, you know, moments they stick out, like, you know, literally you said playing chicken with your largest client, and it's hard to do. Everyone thinks it's obvious and, oh, of course, and it worked out, and, you know, but boy, what a tough night's sleep that probably was waiting for that next day, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
it was. Yeah, I mean, you know, how do you go back in and say, hey, we just lost whatever percentage of the business was, I just walked away from it, you know? And as a leader, that's gotta, I mean, you want to make the right decisions, and you did, but, you know, they're looking at you and it's like, if it didn't work out, it'd be pretty bleak, to use your word.
So no, it was kind of life or death at that point. So
that's great. So what was the mindset like for, like, within Ramona's, like your team, that, you know, you get on board, you're taking over leadership. Was it difficult to lead them, or, you know, were they eager to follow? Did they want the help? Did they see maybe some dysfunctionality that you were maybe like a voice of reason to break through?
Well, it was kind of mixed, to be honest. You know, I was in a finance role, and, mm-hmm. and sometimes, you know, the company accountants don't get a lot of respect. When I took over as CEO in 2014, that's when things were bleak, right? So mm-hmm. I took over last man standing, and the family said, hey, either make it profitable or close the lights and we'll sell the real estate. So I did have a couple of people leave, you know, they're like, Ed, you know, I can't stick around. This is too much craziness for me. But the people that stayed, they were scared, but it's like, hey, let's make the best of it. And I got a plan and let's carry it out and see what happens. So
that's great.
It all worked out.
That's great. So the founder of Ramona's created a board of directors for the company. And you described that as one of the best decisions your founder made. What kind of impact has the board had on the business and maybe even on you?
Right. Well, she created a board back in the day. It was primarily other family members, which was not really working very well. Eventually, when the founder had to retire, one of the uncles came in as CEO, making a lot of bad decisions. The company's losing money. Not a lot of, you know, positive news coming out. The family board was not able to make a change because, hey, that's uncle, right? So what happened was the board voted to retire. They got an independent board. Of a very smart people, independent people, they made the change and they actually saved the company. So
that's awesome.
They got him out.
So how has having an independent board influenced your leadership and decision-making as president? Do you use them a lot? Do they, I mean, do, you know, how does that work for you?
Well, technically we really don't have a formal board anymore.
Okay.
So we have like an informal advisors, that I rely on. I also use a lot of my YPO contacts as kind of my unofficial board. And it's been great. You know, they keep me honest. They keep me focused. I really rely on their guidance.
Very cool. So, I mean, my next question is going to revolve around trends. And, you know, like we are advertising and marketing companies. We're made up of several different agencies at Pavone Group. And one is Quench, which is the CPG food and beverage agency that you know. And then another is Vigor, which is a restaurant agency, right? And so every year, the team at the Pavone Group puts together our annual food trends, tying in restaurant trends, tying in flavoring trends, CPG, like what's just going on, right? Like what is happening? So how do you track trends and what sort of trends are you watching in the industry?
Yeah, well, like, you know, Michael, your report that you guys put out is very useful to me. I do refer to that very frequently throughout the year.
I wasn't looking for a plug there, by the way. It really wasn't.
I'll send you an invoice later. Yeah, no, it's information like that from people like you that are on the ground. You're seeing, you know, what's happening. You know, while I'm stuck here in this office trying to, you know, keep the operations going. And what I'm seeing, you know, Mexican food is very, very sexy right now.
Yep.
Obviously, everybody and their mother knows that, you know, Siete was sold for, you know, $1 trillion. You know, there is a push to healthier Mexican food, you know, high protein. I would say the only bad news in Mexican food, I think Tex-Mex is kind of dying out. I see some of the Tex-Mex restaurant chains kind of shutting down. I think that's become kind of passe. But I'm happy. I love being in Mexican food. I think it's very exciting and it's almost American food now. So.
Yeah. Well, I would say you're so on trend. It's not even funny. I mean, it's just truly, you know, it's just, it's American food, like you said, which is great.
Yeah.
Now, so one of the things interesting to me is I get to see and meet and work with a lot of CEOs, whether it's on the CPG side at Quench or the restaurant side at Vigor. And it's wild because a lot of times you'll see restaurants that will create their own CPG products. I mean, that's kind of what happened with Ramona's, right? There'll be some fewer of these, but sometimes there'll be brands out there that will then create their own restaurant chains off of their CPG brand. So how did that influence things? Like how did the restaurants tie in? Like what was the strengths of that or weaknesses of that? Or did it help or didn't it help? Or can you talk a little bit about that, the combination of the two?
Yeah, you know, it happened very organically here. Our largest restaurant here at Ramona's was actually our admin office in the front parking lot. And people used to knock on the door and say, hey, do you guys sell Mexican? You know, you got some Ramona's food here? And so they're like, well, what if we made this a restaurant? So
that's awesome.
It was that simple. And now it's our top selling restaurant that does more than your average McDonald's.
Wow.
And it's just amazing. So there was not a lot of thought put back into it. It was just people trying to survive, man. It was just,
that's funny. You know,
so that's great.
How many restaurants do you have then?
We have four restaurants.
Four. Okay.
I like to say we kind of run those in our spare time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of our time is spent on the frozen food line.
Sure.
And we're actually starting a tortilla line too. We started off as a tortilla company,
mm-hmm.
but now we're getting back into it. So
that's awesome. So I'm assuming this, but I want to clarify. There's no desire to really grow the restaurant side.
It's really tough, you know, especially here in California. I'm looking for spots. Everything's taken already by Chipotle mm-hmm. and. Mm-hmm. Qdoba and Taco Bell that, you know, they get exclusives in the shopping plazas. So not a lot of good spots left, unfortunately. Yeah. It's very saturated. But I think maybe outside of California.
That's cool. Good.
Yeah.
I mean, again, obviously, and you obviously have a love mark for a brand. I mean, if people are knocking on your office door for you to feed them, they must love the food. So, I mean, it's, you probably are closer to maybe doing what the In-N-Out guys have accomplished than not. So that's pretty
right,
cool.
Right.
That's very cool. So, okay. When it comes to leadership in philosophy, you know, how has it evolved over the years? Since you started Ramona's, I mean, you started in 2012, you came into a tough situation, you took over, you got the ship straightened out in 6 months. Like what, you know, how has your leadership style changed or hasn't it?
You know, I would say that, you know, back in the days, it was more, solving some problems. You know, I was mm-hmm. Firefighting, kind of just jumping to get things done, kind of doing too much.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're more stable, I think I'm focused more on developing the employees, making sure that they're fully trained in the event that, you know, I retire or if I'm not here, they know how to do their job. So it's like kind of transferring the power down.
Sure.
I like that. They like that. So that's kind of our philosophy.
Very cool. Now, do you have a succession plan? Are you working on that now or do you have anything in mind there?
Yeah, we're working on that. We have a couple of high performing employees here. So every once in a while, we give them a little bit more, kind of fill up their toolbox. I analyze what they're missing and then I give them experience.
Very cool.
To kind of fill that toolbox.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. So the growth is happening. I mean, how does the growth happen in the frozen side? I mean, obviously you have a good product. People know it. I'll say it's somewhat of a love mark in the region. People are eating it and trying it. And how are you getting growth? How is this scaling up?
Right now we're just focused on Southern California,
mm-hmm.
Southwest USA. I read a book. It's called Small Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot think of the author's name right now, but, you know, he said you can be a small company and still be very successful, very profitable, and just live a good life, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always run into these entrepreneurs and like, oh, I want to be a $100 million company.
Mm-hmm.
And you ask them, why do you want to be a $100 million? It's like, well, everybody wants to be a $100 million. Like, that's the natural order of things. And I'm just
right.
I'm like, bro, just be a $20 million company, have plenty of work-life balance,
mm-hmm.
be super profitable, you know, take your vacations and make it last, you know? So that's what we're focused on right now.
Yeah. It's funny. My wife and I were talking a lot about work-life balance over the weekend. I said, you know what it comes down to? It works out perfect. I work a lot. She enjoys life and that's our balance. So she agreed. So
yeah,
it was perfect. Perfect balance there. So
very, very similar situation here.
So, you said culture is what happens. This is interesting. You said culture is what happens when you're not there. And I agree with you on that because I always say I can't institute culture. I can't press the button and say, hey, we want culture now. So what do you think you can do? How can you describe your culture at Ramona's? And then talk about like what you can do or what you've done to help build it.
Okay. Well, you know, it's a lot of it is learned, behaviors. You know, I work hard. I'm always pushing. I'm always trying to improve. You know, in the previous life, I worked at Toyota, and you know, they have the Kaizen.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Always improving.
Yep. Improvement.
Always challenging people. You know, what can we do better today? How do we make this a better place for everybody, our employees, our customers? And so I think that just kind of permeates down to where people are always just trying to improve. You know, we got people going back to school. We're very flexible with time off. Mm-hmm. So I think it just kind of permeates throughout the company.
That's great. Do you have like a lot of pressures from other companies nearby that are plucking your folks, or, you know, is there a lot of competition for the workforce?
Well, not really.
Okay.
And I will say it's almost getting easier, but for a bad reason. You know, a lot of companies are leaving California.
Yeah.
You know, I think California really doesn't want businesses like mine in California for a variety of reasons. And so a lot of them have left. A lot of food companies have left. They're going to Texas or going to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So not, you know, I think our unemployment rate's like 6% here in California. So yeah, not a lot of opportunities anymore in food. Yeah. So
Wow. So, you know, we talk about, and again, you come from a really neat sweet spot where it's, I have several brands that I work with and people I know that have done the restaurant / CPG. What advice would you give a founder entering into that space now? Like, and talk about like, if I have a restaurant, you can give me advice on if I'm just entering the CPG world as a president or as a brand, but also talk about it from a restaurant perspective to the CPG. I always find that to be really fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, if they're going strictly CPG, I would say, you know, get profitable as quickly as possible. It's actually a game changer, and it's, you know, kind of cliche, but when we were not profitable, we made a lot of bad decisions. We made, you know, we took clients that we shouldn't have. We sold products that we shouldn't have. We had pricing that was too low because, oh, we'll make it up in volume. You know, the old cost accounting joke. And so we made a lot of bad decisions. When we became profitable, that's when life got slower. You know, we could, you know, make better decisions, make better products. And going from a restaurant to CPG, that is tough, my friend. It's you have to do it like as a regional play. And I actually know a couple people actually on the East Coast that have Mexican restaurants, and they're making basically burritos in their spare time, frozen burritos in their spare time, and selling them to local retailers. And what they're finding is, you know, they get to that inflection point where, okay, we either got to go hard or we just got to stop because we're killing ourselves. So.
And then the capital expenses kick in, right? And then you look at that big nut for that factory and everything else, and
So either partner, get a co-man, but don't try to, you know, do it yourself. We had the luxury of doing this in, you know, the 1960s, 1970s when, you know, money was cheap and maybe permits weren't so rigorous, but it's a whole different mindset. The restaurants frozen, it's a different customer. It's really insanity.
That's great. All right. Well, I have one final question for you. So, and it cannot be one of your burritos. I'm sorry. But last question, if you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
Wow. Well, you know, I think in my, inside, I'm a 12-year-old boy, so I think I'm going to go with a McRib and a Shamrock Shake.
Wow. Yeah. It's just very colorful. It's a very colorful meal.
Very colorful.
Not particularly good for you, but yeah, I was going to say, not particularly healthy, but hey, that's all right. It's your last meal. What does it matter,
last meal, bro.
Yeah. You can just go out with a minty Shamrock Shake.
Go out with the bang.
That's fantastic. But,
yeah, that would be it.
Well, Edward, you were awesome. I always enjoy talking to you, and it's great seeing you. And really want to thank you so much for your time today. This is a fascinating interview.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me on, and look forward to seeing you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, no worries. I got to get the beginning here. Hi there, and welcome to Fork Tales. Today on Fork Tales, we're joined by Edward Mendina, president of Ramona's Food Group. Ramona's is a family-owned business known for its authentic Mexican meals. Under Edward's leadership, Ramona's has transformed from a struggling business into a thriving brand rooted in tradition and innovation. Edward, thank you so much for joining us.